Hi, everyone. This is Arzo, and you're listening to Truth Talk with the Real American Afghan. Today, I have a very special guest with me. She is a highly accomplished female attorney. She is part of the State Bar of California. She's been admitted to practice before the California Supreme Court. She has been named as a top 100 lawyer on the National Advocates list. She's a top 40 lawyer under 40. She made that list in 2015. Lawyers Magazine has called her a rising star. On top of all of that, she's also president of the We Hope Foundation. And she was inducted by Alameda County's Women Hall of Fame. She is a first-generation immigrant. She has her own practice called the Law Offices of Spojmay Nosity. And I'm just so excited to welcome you to the show, Spojmay John. Thank you so much for being here today.
Assalamu alaikum, Azra John. Thank you so much for the opportunity and the privilege to be able to do this podcast with you. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. And I love to speak with accomplished and strong Afghan females. I think it's really important, especially for our community, to hear those voices. So I know that I've connected with you on social media, and just reading your bio, I was just really impressed by all the things that you do. And the specific thing that really caught my attention about you and why I wanted to bring you on the show was that, yes, you're Afghan, and yes, you are accomplished. You have your own practice, and all of those things in itself are very admirable. But you are also somebody that's highly engaged in civic duty and civic activities here in America. And I feel like that's something that more Afghans in the West need to start to adopt into their lifestyles. And we'll get to all of that. But I'm always curious. So I just want to know a little bit about your background. You know, you were born in Afghanistan, obviously. What was it like coming here? And what was your upbringing like here in America?
I was born in Paktia. It's a rural village in Gardez, and I've never been in Kabul. So when my father was here, he had requested for us to join him due to complications with immigration. Was not able to migrate to the United States. So I came to California, grew up in Concord, California, you know, went to school locally. From the age 6 till about age 14, I grew up with my 4 siblings and myself and with my father, who was most of the time absent because, you know, immigrants working day and night trying to make basic, you know, necessities for us. So I think for me, the vast difference between majority of the Afghans that I grew up in that generation was is I grew up in a home where, you know, obviously there was love and support, but my mother was not there growing up. And my father, you know, did his best that he could, but a lot of times he was absent from our home.
Being a young person and just not having an adult around and getting to the point that you have, becoming so accomplished, what were those things that kept you going? I mean, you're a child, there's a lot of different needs that you have. You know, you want your parent to be around to, you know, maybe help you with your homework or tell you, you know, this is what you should be focusing on. It sounds like you probably had that, but maybe in a minimal way. So you pretty much self-directed, it sounds like. What was that like, self-directing yourself? What were your focuses? What were your distractions? And what motivated you?
Well, I think first and foremost, I had an older brother and an older sister. So I was the third child. And then I had another younger sibling, so there's 5 of us. And so it was my older brother, who was a couple years older, and then my sister. And I think they stepped in as the parental role. My brother is very strict. He's maybe about, you know, 4 years older than I am. So not much difference when he's 12 and you're only like 8 or 9. My older sister, who's about 3 years older than me, stepped in as the motherly role. So the cooking, the cleaning and stuff like that. And I think what motivated for us is, you know, my father, although he was absent, was a very kid of education. He wasn't there to give us the guidance that we provide for our children day in, day out now. But the biggest factor was knowing that my mother had sacrificed so much to send her children to a country where, you know, she didn't know when she would see them. And knowing how important it was for her to achieve that education. I mean, first and foremost, you know, it's Allah's guidance. You know, you do what Allah provides you with. But second of all, I think I would say my mother was the biggest factor. in terms of like our motivation and our guidance and staying in the path, although we didn't have, you know, the traditional parent role that we provide for our children right now. As a mother of three, I couldn't imagine letting my child go, you know, not knowing when I would see them. So I think the biggest factors were the motivation, the fact that my mother was separated from us, and that, you know, we didn't know when or if we would see her. And
your siblings kind of took on this adult parenting role. What was that like? Was that, you know, were you guys more of like siblings and friends, or really was that, you know, you had a little bit of that, this is my authority figure and I've got to just listen to what this person has to say? What was that experience like?
Yeah, well, I'd have to be honest here. I think it was more like fend for yourself, sort of. You know, you have the sibling that's not your parent. You know, you constantly fight. You know, if you leave your kids alone for a few minutes, they fight. You know, I think that having been so close in age, you know, we had our quarrels. We, you know, we fought, we argued. We got along to a certain extent, to where, you know, we had to listen to my brother or my sister. I think the biggest factor was my sister lost her childhood. She had to be the mother, the you know, sort of the cooking and the cleaning, and she didn't really have a childhood. We got along. I think we got along to an extent possible without parental guidance. No matter how much, you're still children and you still need that guidance. And my father was very, you know, supportive in his own ways, but also, you know, a very non-emotional person, didn't show much affection. So I think having lost that nourishing from your parents does impact you as you grow up an adult and you look at how different you raise your children.
That makes a lot of sense. And definitely the way that you described your father, I think that's pretty standard, very much so, for a lot of Afghan fathers in the community, to just be a little bit more emotionless and keep from showing that. What was school like? Because you came in the early 80s. What was growing up in school like? You know, at the time, I know there was not a lot of immigrants at the time. And from my own experience, being kind of the one that, you know, stuck out, looked different, my name was different. What was that like for you?
We had an American woman who was, you know, from the Catholic Church, who had sponsored us to come to the U.S. I think for me, that was a pivotal factor in who I am today. I think more than any, she would tutor us. She lived in an affluent in Lafayette. She would come, she would teach us, she would do English. I think she was, again, the pivotal person who guided us in doing school and doing our work. Yet from an early age, I don't know, I guess, you know, just personality trait-wise, I was always involved in student leadership and very much, you know, student body president and just everyday American life. I never had any challenges in terms of, you know, discrimination or feeling left out.
I love that you said a lot of really, I think, impactful and unique things. Saying that, having that female mentor, that Catholic woman, was very pivotal for you. That's really interesting. We actually were also sponsored by somebody that was a Catholic woman when we came to America, and the Catholic Community Services in San Diego, when I grew up, they provided our family with a lot of support services and helped my dad get a job and everything. So I've always kind of had an affinity to Catholic organizations. I've you know, volunteered throughout the years with a few Catholic organizations. They've just done such great work and supported my family and a lot of Afghans. So to kind of be able to repay that in some way, I thought was kind of important. But that's interesting that you had that experience and she was kind of the person that helped kind of guide you and teach you kind of the ropes about how to kind of move forward or what things to focus on. And I like that you said that you didn't feel a sense of discrimination growing up, that you took on leadership roles as a child. And I have to agree with you on that. Growing up here, I went through some of this, you know, growing up, challenges and little bullying here and there, but it wasn't a discrimination issue. And I never felt that either, but I was also involved too. So I think that's, you know, I'm glad that you brought that up, and it's nice to hear somebody else kind of share that similar aspect.
You know, it's funny. I mean, I would have, you know, the student, you know, government over at my house, and, you know, my mom would make Afghan food, and you know, I would purposely pray in front of my friends, whether it's a cheerleader or a football player. being Afghan, being Muslim is something uniqueness that you take in and stuff like that. Like we started in my high school, we did the cultural society. You know, we had a multicultural assembly, right? And it was, I started it, you know, we wore Afghan clothes and all of that. And I think that that pride in being Muslim and an Afghan stuck with me at a younger age. And I think that, that's important that we portray that, that we don't, you know, hide behind that because we think that it may be a taboo or something. And I hope that, my kids learn. And I think they do know to a certain point.
I just, I feel like you were just meant for greatness, you know, obviously from just such a young age, you just felt that calling to, even from that small example of having the cheerleaders and the school kids at your house and, you know, feeding them Afghan food and purposely praying and showing them about being Afghan. Those are leadership skills. Those are like natural leadership abilities, and it doesn't come naturally for everybody. So I just wanted to kind of know, what was your passion to focus on the immigration aspect of law?
So immigration is something that's been always that has impacted my life. It was the reason that, you know, separated me from my mother for so many years. And as a child, I remember sitting in different immigration offices in Oakland or somewhere at Concord or somewhere, people helping us to try to, you know, get my mom's paperwork done here. So when I went to law school, the idea was, you know, maybe get into immigration. But, you know, I ventured out into doing family law, criminal law, bankruptcy, and asbestos litigation. And I just didn't really have a passion for it. And what happened is when I went to law school, I had gotten married in college. And when I went to law school, I had my children, my first, second, and third year of law school. And after passing the bar, I went back to live in Davis, where I'd gone for undergrad for a couple years because my husband was doing his fellowship. And I started doing pro bono immigration work at the UC Davis Law School. Would represent detainees out far away in immigration court because I was licensed. I was able to do that pro bono. So I did that for about 3 years and just absolutely fell in love with it. And then when I moved back to the Bay Area, because I had extensive experience, I just opened up my own law practice around 2011. So what drove me to immigration was the fact that as a child, you know, it was the barrier that prevented me from, you know, my mother coming here and having experience. And then also just going back and knowing that it's such impactful. It's the people who have gone through similar experiences, and the work that you do is so, you know, changing lives and uniting people that have been separated for so many years. So I think for me, immigration law was always there on the back burner, and then just kind of went full circle and came back to it.
That's incredible. You took your life experience and the thing that you're passionate about and tried different avenues until you found that right fit. And it's great. You know, I think a lot of people kind of get stuck in something that they start and it's not necessarily that right fit for them. And they get stuck in it and they don't have the courage to find the thing that calls them. And I love that you listened to your calling. You just continued until you were in alignment and you knew this is where I need to be.
I think having gone straight from high school to college to law school and just to work sort of put you in a perspective where it's a survival, I think, for lack of better words, and not in a bad way. Growing up, I was more, like I said, like a tomboy. And, you know, I met my husband in college second year, and being the traditional parents, you know, by that time, my mom was here, obviously. And we got married during college, and then he went off to med school in another state, and I ended up staying here for law school. And I lived with my in-laws, and I know a lot of times people say, how could you live? I lived with my in-laws for almost 10 years by choice. You know, in between, I know I had my kids during first, second, and third year law school, and it was challenging. It was hard. And if I had to do it over again, I think the one thing I would change is that you don't get to fully enjoy your kids. And alhamdulillah, I was blessed to have such supporting in-laws, more sometimes supporting in-laws than my own parents, who I would say my mother-in-law helped me raise my kids. I lived with them. And thankfully, alhamdulillah, I've never put my kids in daycare. So I think having that ability and having that family support structure has got me where I am. I sometimes joke, I say half of my law degree is my mother-in-law because she raised my three kids. And my kids call me Ade, which is mom in Pashto, and they call her Ade. So sometimes I would get jealous, like, wait, I'm Ade, not that's Ade K, you know? So, but she was so loving, like they were her kids. And my husband and I got married very young. So having juggled all that, I think And I haven't studied for the bar exam with three kids under age three. It was difficult, but, you know, having left at, 6 o'clock in the morning and come back at 9 p.m. at night because you're studying, it took a toll emotionally as a mom, but also, the gratitude and the sincere, love and appreciation for I think I was in my mother-in-law and my in-laws, they were young kids. You know, it takes a village to raise a kid. So I think if people have that opportunity to have that love and support, I wouldn't be here who I am today without them. So I think family support is very important.
Thank you for pointing that out. I think that's kind of been a theme in this discussion today, from your childhood and just kind of not having that or just having the siblings there to being an adult and going through the challenges of law school and marriage and having and the importance of having that support system to help you raise the kids. Because I think there are a lot of young people and especially today in Western society, there's a lot of focus and emphasis on women being that it's challenges, it's very challenging. And without a strong support system, it might not be possible. There are costs to everything. And, I appreciate that you were honest and transparent about saying that, one thing that I, look back on and think I wish I had more time with my kids. I think that's something that people kind of forget that, being a career woman, it comes at a cost.
There's always strings pulling you different ways. And I think if you continue to maintain the values of what's important and, not lose perspective and having the support not only of your family, but also of your spouse. And my mom used to, when I used to go pull 10, 8 hours a day to study for the bar exam, my mom would say in Pashto, you're such a crazy girl. Your husband is going to be a doctor. Why do you need to do this? And my mother-in-law would say, no, sister, she needs to do this for herself. So I think we have a lot of cultural barriers that pull us and you just have to stay focused.
It really is true. You have to stay focused and follow that drive and that calling inside you. That's amazing. And so I'm not surprised that you have such a passion for civic engagement. It's definitely part of your character, your identity, who you are. And you do a lot of work. You're the president of the We Hope Foundation. You are involved in various law organizations. And just speaking with you a little bit earlier, you're on the board of the AOC, which not AOC, AAC, which I want to ask you about that in a second. But just I want to touch a little bit about your civic engagement.
I've always had a desire, to work and give back to the Afghan community, because that is, in essence, other than being Muslim, we are Afghan. So I think being that, I came with this mindset or this ambition that you want to be the person that can make a difference in the lives of Afghans, whether it's through immigration or through other civic engagement or through other stuff that you put yourself out to. But it has its challenges, right? It has its challenges because you can do 10 good things and then the one bad thing you do, our culture and our mindset is just always challenging to deal with. So initially, when I, finished and, got my degree and stuff, I was more into the, Islamic community, civil rights organizations. As I mentioned, I was involved with CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations. For 6 years, I served on the board. For me, I would go into these meetings and people would be like, oh, where are you from? Oh, I'm Afghan. Oh, you're the first Afghan we've had. Or, oh, Afghan voices. Or I know. So, I would do workshops on FBI profiling. Fremont is the largest hub of Afghans outside of the United States, and getting into the civic engagement in our community. But I got the sort of pushback that you don't get in any other people in other cultures. They were very welcoming, whether you went into the Pakistani masjid, whether you went into the mosques in Oakland or other places. With the Afghans, it's challenging. But I've always believed that do the good that you can. And I don't get involved into the nitty gritty of people's opinions or politics. I just get in, do what I need if I'm needed and just get out. And I think that's a challenging within our community. So I think it's always important for us to give back. A general consensus, oh, you're an Afghan lawyer, so you must be inferior to, someone who's non-Afghan. That mentality, wears you out. You do the best work for people, being a Pashto native speaker with a Farsi accent, being a woman, There are like layers of barriers that I have to overcome just to represent an Afghan versus an Afghan going to someone else. And it's a disheartening. And so, but, you know, I continue to do what I can. I'm out there. If somebody needs it, then I'm there. I think that being able to help other people in different atmospheres, such as, you know, there's a lot of challenges in our community, people who need our help. There's a family that, you know, Allah guided me, and I've been helping them for a few years. They lost their father to a drunk driver 2 years ago. And being able to be the tiny piece of the puzzle in their life to make a difference in some meaningful way, I think is full circle of giving back to the woman who gave to us when we were children. And then also my mother, may Allah bless her, she passed away from stomach cancer in 2008. Angelic woman who just gave to the community, whether it was children, whether it was elderly, whether it was Afghan, whether it was non-Afghan, Muslim. She just had this love and this passion. And if I can be 0.1% of what she was to the community and how much she gave, then inshallah, made her proud. So I think it's important for all of us. I think that we do see these challenges of pushback, and we have to find a way to overcome that. And it's unfortunate that it takes me 10 times more to prove myself to someone in my legal profession with an Afghan versus a non-Afghan. But hopefully with the new generation and the people see more and more of us out there, that mindset will change.
I think that's, I think you touched on a lot of really important things, a lot of really great points. And, you know, again,
thank you so much
for the loss of your mom. She sounds like a very special woman. And I just want to finish this off by touching on the Afghan American conference. That's something newly that I found out about in the last couple of years. I was fairly impressed with the level of professionalism, a lot of Afghan organizations that have popped up throughout the years to kind of bridge that Afghan American gap. I attended their keynote speech. My cousin gave a keynote speech last year, the year before. So I attended that. And I got a taste of just seeing the level of professionalism, and I was very impressed. So you're on the board of that and of that organization. And when they had started initially, it was, from what I understand, it was supposed to be kind of an age cutoff and more for college age kids.
Yes, there definitely was an age gap. And I would say I felt very insecure, not because there were so many young kids. It's just that I didn't feel like it was a fit for me, right, as an attendee. And then over the years, I've supported them. And then I think they're transitioning into not just a conference for 2 days, 3 days, and then boom, everybody goes. I think they're the first on the platform of organizations, Afghan organizations that are set forth in terms of, you know, representing Afghans. And I think they themselves realized that maybe we need to bring in people of different calibers, people of different age, different demographics. So they reached out to me last year, and I was honored that they had reached out and asked if I was interested in joining the board. And one of the reasons they asked me why I was interested was the very reason I just mentioned earlier, that there is this voice amongst my age group, or maybe, you know, give or take 4 or 5 years, that there's so many of us out there. And a lot of us don't do this civic engagement or don't get involved because of time or because no interest or stuff like that. So that was my platform to come in and see, to give a demographics of our age group and be able to give a voice. So they're in transition there. You know, they just became a nonprofit. And so they're in transition of doing all of that. So I'm hoping, inshallah, to be of some voice and in bringing the demographics and in being able to bring in ideas that will help and serve the community. And their work is work in progress. You know, they're transitioning from not only just that 2-3 day conference, which takes extraordinary amount of talent, dedication, money, and work that they do, but they want to be more than that. So I've just, you know, joined the board this year and see how it goes and where it takes us. But COVID has, you know, impacted everything on so many different levels.
It definitely has. It's really created us, it's pushed all of us to become a virtual world. And I think, you know, I'm sure as a lawyer, you're doing a lot of your work virtually, as am I. A lot of my meetings are just Zoom calls. Hopefully we'll get through this crazy time. Well, with that said, I just like to thank you again for being on the show, being so candid and open about your life, your experiences, and hopefully through sharing, you will have inspired other young Afghans that you can be Afghan and proud of who you are. You can be, you know, strong in your faith and still be American and do great work for both Afghanistan and be a great American citizen. So I thank you for being that beautiful example.
One of the only thing I would say is, you know, especially for the Afghan woman, you know, we have, whether here or back home, particularly, you know, the mindset is changing, but I know, you know, within our community, there's a lot of pushback for young girls to, you know, not pursue education or you know, their ability is hindered by. I think it's important to, no, I'm not advocating to go against your parents or anything like that. I'm saying, you know, find a mentor, find someone. I'm always supportive of young women who reach out to me to get mentoring or find out. I just had someone call me last week connected through their mother through Facebook saying, you know, I want to go to law school. What does it entail? I love taking interns, you know, I'm in the Bay Area and teaching, you know, young women, you know, or even men that are interested, being a mentor, being, you know, there for our Afghan community if people need it. So if anyone's ever interested in reaching out, feel free. I also think that, again, as you mentioned, civic engagement is very critical now more than ever before, where there's so many pushback for Muslim Americans, for Afghan, you know, necessarily Afghan Americans or just immigrants, you know. Have a passion, follow your passion. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. That's my motto. It's hard. It's sacrifices. You give, you take. At the end, you reach your goal and you say to yourself that along the way, everyone helped me, but ultimately I stuck with it and did it. So inshallah, I pray that you guys all, you know, continue to drive your passion. I would say that, you know, get involved with other organizations, whether it's, you know, Muslim American organizations such as CARE or ISF, Islamic Scholarship Foundation. There are not many Afghans in those organizations. Me, along with two or three other people who have been involved with CARE, which is Council on American Islamic Relations. They provide civil rights. It's a civil rights organization, nonprofit that provides. So I would say, you know, go outside your barrier, you know, reach out and also reach out to other people. You know, the worst thing that can happen is they can say no, or they can, you know, and you just open up another door. So continue to do the things that you do. And inshallah, if anybody's ever need, feel free to reach out to me. Koshmai@nasirilaw.com. I'm on the web, so you can look it up. You can send me an email. Anything that you may need some guidance on, I'm happy to be that voice and be able to, you know, there are people again along the way that helped me get to where I am, and you know, paying it forward is a great thing.
Well, thank you again. This has been very interesting and definitely joyful for me to partake in. And for everyone else that's listening, I appreciate your continued loyalty. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Of course, I've got a great episode coming up next week as well. So please stay tuned. You can follow me on Instagram at the Arzo Yusuf, ArzoYusuf.
One last thing, guys. It's always been a dream of mine to help the Afghan orphans. And I know it's one of your dreams too. Social entrepreneurship is my method of doing that. For any person that purchases a product on my website, sexybossbabe.com, I'll donate 50% of the proceeds to my favorite charity that supports Afghan orphans, the HRF Foundation. If you use the code TRUTH at checkout, you'll also get free shipping. I really believe that we can create change together as a community. If you'd like to learn more about the great work that HRF does, please visit their website, hrfcares.org. Thanks, everyone.